So my birthday.
Shaktivesh Avatar will come back unlimitedly many times under Krishna's order. But he's always in Golok because he has that consciousness of Krishna. Mm-hmm. And it got me to thinking, does Garuda carry us back to Golok and we always do that? Or can we look forward to like eternity, like serving our spiritual master? Like Tamal Krishna Goswami left his body, and it was said, well, some devotees had a sense that Prabhupada had called him and that he was going to, another universe maybe to serve Prabhupada there. At the same time, you think, did he go back to Godhead? Maybe that is going back to Godhead, or because if you had a, I was just curious.
No, it's a legitimate question, but I don't know if I have the answer. I mean, I can bluff. You want to bluff?
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely.
No. I mean, even where Prabhupada is, he didn't make it very clear he's going to another planet to preach, or is he going to, play with Krishna in the fields of Vrindavan, or whether he's, what's Prabhupada's rasa? We don't even know. Right? So what to speak of Goswami Maharaj? I also have that feeling that he's assisting Prabhupada somewhere. So, I mean, I was there in London when Prabhupada called for him to come there. He was in L.A. and the devotees there, Guru Das, Shamshir, and Mukunda, they wanted him to come to manage the temple because they were struggling. And they knew he was expert. So Prabhupada agreed, and Goswami Maharaj came. And so I can see like that Prabhupada may have thought he'd be more value at this time in this place than he was here. Just moving his men around. otherwise, it's an interesting point that you made, how the Shaktivesh avatar is always coming. We know that Prabhupada was Shaktivesh avatar, so we can think that he's coming again. What was that quote? Do you have a reference to that?
I've never heard that before either.
I was in the Pujari room, and I was listening to the Bhagavatam text at that time. And
just recently?
Recently, yeah, it was recently. I want to say it was Saturday morning. It would have been Saturday morning. And I meant to look at the Bhagavatam and see.
So I was giving class?
Yes.
Yesterday morning?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember that. So what did it say again?
Well, I had a sense that maybe my mind heard.
Well, maybe we have it right here.
There's that verse where it says that the incarnations of the Lord come like the waves of the ocean and they keep coming.
It may have been that. I may have mixed it up with that. Because it was talking about
Prithu. Canto, chapter 10.
20.
They were talking about Prithu Maharaj.
Yeah.
I may have just grafted what they were saying about Vishnu onto Prabhupada and thought, Prabhupada's always coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got it.
There's no 34 in 10. Chapter 10 goes up to 30. 24? Dhruva Maharaj's fight with the Yakshas?
No.
Lord Vishnu. Triangle of Manu?
20th chapter.
20th chapter?
Yeah.
Oh.
So he's got it.
Okay.
Not 10th chapter, but 20th chapter.
There's a magnifying glass in there somewhere.
Okay. I think I'll be all right. I'll hold it close.
420.
This is better. Okay. The great Saint Maitreya told Vidura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, simply amply appreciated the meaningful prayers of Maharaj Prithu. Thus, after being properly worshipped by the king, the Lord blessed him and decided to depart.
I'm very confident about that. And concerned about it. And that's why I have strength to preach to those who want to go to, some other group or something. I think, no, because here, then you'll know that Prabhupada is still overlooking the thing. That's his, Like, I saw practically in 1969 how Prabhupada was concerned about what would be the future of his mission, because he saw what happened to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's mission. He took that as a defeat. It was some kind of failure that, you know, not on his blame the spiritual master, but the fact that the disciples didn't follow the order of the spiritual master properly. And therefore, the Gaudiya Math splintered into so many. So, but I was thinking how to avoid that in my ISKCON society, in, you know, the society that he was creating. Therefore, he was taxing his brain how to make a workable GBC, and not, you know, sometimes disbanding them and training them and bringing them. And in a sense, I felt that he did that even after he left. In 1987, the GBC was disbanded. How was that done? Except by Prabhupada. It really was disbanded. You know, it came to the point where this 50-man committee took over the authority of the GBC voluntarily. But, and then, you know, they, each GBC man came with, I was part of that 50-man committee. And then they gave a report, and so, you know, and some new GBCs were added, and some, and so that's really what happened in Prabhupada's time, too. I don't think that could have happened without Prabhupada's being involved, somehow directly involved. And I think it's still going on, you know, how he's somehow working to improve our society or whatever. So that's a little confusing for me, because there it says that Arjuna couldn't remember. Why not? Why couldn't? I think maybe that's pastime also. In other words, Krishna says, for me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So Krishna wanted Arjuna to forget his past first, but I don't think Prabhupada is, wherever he is now, he said he didn't forget what he did in his last life. I can't believe that.
Well, actually, there is an instance where Krishna Goswami questioned Prabhupada's position. He was a very young devotee. And Prabhupada chastised him, saying that for one, it's not your position to be asking that, and for two, since you want to know, in my previous life I was a physician, I was free from bodies. So he actually referred to his previous life.
I've heard
that too. He's free from what? He was free from vice. He didn't commit any, you know, and he was a physician.
I had heard that too, but I heard it a little differently. I heard it that...
I kind of give you a summary, like, but Goswami went into more detail about it.
But he said that that's what Prabhupada told him.
Yeah. I wrote him, actually. It's in a letter, because he had written a letter and he was asking questions like Narad Muni.
Because I heard that Prabhupada said an astrologer told me my last life.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I think I heard that way too.
No, you're probably right.
Which is a little different.
Not that he was... not that he presented like he was 100% convinced. He just... No. He presented it as
what he did say very clearly, that in this life I was always serving Krishna, so, since he was a child. That.
I heard Ridayananda Das Goswami say that Prabhupada had told them, he was with some other devotees in India, I believe, Prabhupada had told them that there was never a time that he did not know Krishna.
Yeah, that's. Mm-hmm. I think that was the same incident when Goswami asked it. Anyway. So, how does that come back to your question?
Well, the thing I was thinking of, another devotee had told me that Tamal Krishna Goswami, someone had done a chart on him. They'd somehow found out his birth time, and they had determined that in his previous lifetimes, he'd always been a sannyasi for many, many births before this. And so I don't know, I've just got a sense of perhaps maybe if he's always come to serve Prabhupada, that perhaps, you know, he's put into a position where he forgets. Prabhupada never forgets, but his devotee forgets. And then maybe somehow by the process of remembering, then we become Krishna conscious.
I remember Prabhupada said that my spiritual master has sent you all to assist me, implying that they had, you know, been souls who, you know, were highly qualified to take birth as hippies in America to serve Prabhupada. Something like that.
I mean, Prabhupada sometimes would encourage us too. Like once I was giving a massage and Panjaduri Goswami was, I was massaging one leg, Panjaduri massaging the other leg. Prabhupada said, actually, you're demigods in your last life. You've come to help me. But, you know, I was smiling. It was just, you know, I don't think I did. maybe a damn demon or something, but not a demi.
I have a question. You said that Srila Prabhupada would enjoy talking with anybody, no matter who it was, because he had that.
Well, it was.
And even if he disagreed.
Up to a limit.
Do you remember an occasion where he was having a pretty friendly disagreement, but enjoying it,
Yeah, well, like with the Dr. Patel. Have you ever read conversation books? You never heard Dr. Patel? Walks in Bombay. There were always some kind of transcendental disagreement. But Prabhupada, when he wasn't there, he said, "Where's Dr. Patel? Let us talk. And you take the position of the Mayavadi. You take the position." Prabhupada liked him. He liked to discuss. And he mentions, right, that these kind of discussions centered around Krishna, they strengthen your mind. You become more convinced about the philosophy. So he didn't shy away from controversial talks. I mean, he didn't like some things he didn't like. Like, who was it was saying? Somebody said, what's the relationship between Balaram and Radharani? Why do you ask? Something like that. So you have to know a little bit about it. But generally, he was pretty accommodating about questions. There's another thing. I mean, if anybody said anything to minimize the spiritual master, then he didn't entertain that kind of talk.
Minimize his spiritual master?
Yeah, like I heard a nice story from Tushita Krishna, who's no longer present on the planet. He was kind of like the right-hand man of Siddhasarup from Hawaii. This river is still going on. He's got a following in Poland, and I just heard today on an email that he's got a big group in Russia too. So he was kind of like, he separated from Prabhupada while Prabhupada was even on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept on preaching, so he didn't like ISKCON, he didn't like the GBC. So Prabhupada had some affection for him, but he said, "We have seen over the years he can't work with us." So Prabhupada wasn't so happy about that, but he didn't curse him or something. He was independent, so he's still independent. So this Tushita Krishna told me, I met him in Poland, because the devotees were fighting, not just trying to reconcile, that ISKCON shouldn't fight with them. Like some of the ISKCON devotees were pulling down your posters and stuff. So we're trying to patch things up at the higher level and preach to the devotees to be, not to be fanatic. So he told a nice Prabhupada story. He had quite a bit of association with Prabhupada. He was cooking for Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and this Rishikesh, one of Prabhupada's first disciples, I think he later joined Bhan Maharaj, got initiated by Bhan Maharaj. So he met him on the street when he was going to buy vegetables for Prabhupada, for cooking. And then in their talk on the street, he said something that minimized Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And then, forget exactly what it was. Better not to remember, right? But he came back and this Tushita Krishna told Prabhupada that he met Rishikesh on the street and that he had said this and Prabhupada immediately became angry. He thinks my guru is trying to collect men or something. It was something to do like that. Dhanamna janamna sundarim. He thinks like that or something. And then the next day he came to visit Prabhupada and Prabhupada wouldn't see him, which is pretty unusual. So that was, I'm just giving an example of sometimes Prabhupada wouldn't entertain people if they're offensive, especially to his Guru Maharaj or to the Prabhupada.
Many people were offensive to him.
He would be more tolerant about that. But up to a point, I think. Like one devotee, I remember Aravinda. He was Prabhupada's secretary servant for some time, and then he left. And a year or so later, he came back and he said, "Now I'm really happy," he told Prabhupada. "And since I've left you, now I'm really happy and I've got a nice apartment." And Prabhupada said, "Krishna has saved us from you." Hare Krishna.
Yeah, it's a quick question. What was Guru Das like? He's always an amazing devotee. I've never met him or read anything about him.
He was my temple president for a while, really. Well, I don't know. I guess Makunda was a temple president. No, but then later on, Guru Das became, that's right. Makunda went. Maybe only for a month or two. He was my temple president in London. He was, you know, always kind of jolly soul and accommodating. You know, the only, he was a little easy on himself. But that's good or bad. He was a little too, like, and then when he took sannyas, he gave that up. It was the same. But he still comes, you know, I see, like, the devotees invite him in Berkeley for different festival, Prabhupada's appearance day or something. And he always comes and speaks very nicely. Or like when George Harrison left his body, they invited him to the temple and he spoke mm-hmm. at a Sunday feast about George, his relationship with George. Mm-hmm. And he's very favorable, but it's a little hard for him to practice. Mm-hmm. For, you know, strictly, but... You can see he has a passion for Prabhupada. He tells nice Prabhupada stories.
He struck me as kind of similar to Jayananda Prabhu, just the kind of his demeanor, maybe not quite as serious as Jayananda.
Yeah, that's the difference. Jayananda was his demeanor was similar, but underneath, if you scratch the surface, he was dead serious mm-hmm. about Krishna Consciousness. You know, he would never think about going off someplace else.
I think Gurudas is in San Jose now?
Or? No, San Francisco.
He's in Frisco.
But I mean, he smokes cigarettes. He's not so. But I had some association with Jayananda. He was. You never felt intimidated by him. He was always, you can say, aggressively humble. He would make you feel at ease. He would, you know, he would relate with you in such a way that he would always make you feel that you were superior to him. That was his expertise, and somehow. And he would always be, you know, self-effacing in that way. He would say, like when I first met him in the Bay Area, he said, no, actually Keshav is the one who's doing the main preaching here. He was always glorifying another devotee more than himself. That was his whole. And, you know, thanklessly doing it, bringing the garbage out, and you know, at 10 o'clock at night, coming, doing the needful. It's very congenial. So he was leading from the back, in a sense. He was the, by example. By the... Vishnu John, I also had association with. He was very charismatic, and for me, at least, I thought his singing was... We traveled together for a while on the boat. Actually, Goswami Maharaj was supposed to go. The two of them were going to go on the Ganga. They had a boat and everything. And somehow he couldn't come. I don't know what happened to him. But I went instead. Not instead, but I heard about it, so I just went. I was in Japan. I came to India and I joined. When in Delhi we were. I think Goswami was there in Delhi, but then I think Prabhupada kept him there. And so I went with Vishwajan and a few others just to do he was there. And Baba Bhudi and some other, maybe about 10 devotees. We had this boat and we were going down the Ganga and stopping at every village, you know, just doing. And his chanting was so many people, you know, we go into the village and there'd be hundreds of kids following us. Mm-hmm. And getting to sing, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Government officer, they come down at lunchtime, they have a new Raja or something. So Tejas knew about them, so we went there. Vishwajan sang for the whole moment. The people were, these were, you know, adults, but they were very impressed with his singing and his demeanor, his whole. He looked like a sadhu. Our Radhanath is like that. Mm-hmm. He's got like that sadhu personality. Mm-hmm. So Vishwajan was a little bit like that. Only more charismatic, I think more like a showman, you know? He was like an entertainer. So. Mm. He started that first road show.
Mahatma told me he used to sing his rounds. His chanting was like singing. Mm-hmm. He didn't know how long it must have taken, a long time, but he sang his rounds.
He was real strict about not sleeping too much. That was too much for me. It was austere. For me, it was austere. This is what we used to eat on his boat. We had puff rice and gore, which we gave to the people, right? And we had bags and bags of gore and puff rice. But for devotees, we only had one stove to cook, so we used to cook everything in one pot. Some rice and dal, some vegetables, all up, and one time a day, that was it. And if you were hungry, you ate the puff rice and gore for breakfast and puff rice and gore for snack. Otherwise, it was one meal with one preparation. And I was going for weeks. So like it was doing me in, you know. But he would sit down in the morning. I got so sick of puff rice and gore, you know, I just couldn't eat it anymore. But he would sit down, he had a mound of puff rice like this. And he'd be happy eating, you know, the puff rice. And I couldn't keep up with him. And strict about sleep. If you slept more, sometimes we had the program that, you know, strictly 6 hours sleep. Prabhupada said 6 hours sleep. So sometimes if they overslept or something, then they'd make it up the next day. Can you imagine? Well, wait a minute. Yesterday we slept 7 hours. Today we can only sleep 5. And then he would enforce that. You know, get it? But you know. And, you know, dogs nap in a day. It was like, oh, that was too much for me. In those days, though, it's true. We would, you know, Prabhupada somehow, he was inspiring everybody to do more than you thought you could do. What's the fact? You would push your body, and then you think, well, I can't do any more, but somehow you pushed a little bit more. Just like last night, you got it somehow now. We came back, it was 9 o'clock, I was thinking, now it's time to take rest, my body was ready. But by your mercy, we went out, and when I came back at 10:30, I felt, you know, so you gave me an hour and a half of life where I would have been sleeping.
It was only because you were in Dallas, so I asked a couple of other devotees.
No, we heard that you regularly did that. Saturday. Before I came to Dallas, we heard it.
Yeah, that's true.
We try to.
He's the one, if anybody goes, it's because of him.
It's really not, though, because it's because there's other devotees that I know like to go. Because if they weren't there, then I wouldn't go.
Anyway, most times I don't. Aside from that, the principle is that if you push yourself, you can do more than you think. Of course, there is a limit. Push too much, and then it becomes fanatic, and then you're some kind. But it's good to push your body a little bit. So, the difference between knowing where to start, and association is valuable, that's my point. If you have other people fired up, then it's easier to do that. That's my experience. Like, if I'm alone, it's hard for me to get up every morning, you know, but when I'm in the temple, it's easy because I'm a sannyasi, I have to be my Lord. What will people think? This is some social pressure. And it would. They'll think that I'm in Maya. So you're not supposed to come. If I don't go, why should they come? Anyway, it's true. I could sleep in sometimes. But there's a pressure there. And it's good. It's not, you know, that way. You can, at least for me, because maybe my mode of ignorance is still a little prominent. So it's good to curb that. Because we don't want to be in ignorance, right? Dasha is bad enough, but ignorance is the worst. Once Prabhupada told that he had one servant, Paramahansa Swami, this gentleman, Prabhupada. I don't know if you ever met him, but he was a nice boy. But he would sleep too much. And Prabhupada would get annoyed. You know, like during the day, Prabhupada would go looking for him, he'd be sleeping. Why are you sleeping? You should be, you know. So this was going on for some time. So he told me the story. I met him in the restaurant in San Francisco after he had looked. And he said that he was telling Prabhupada, he had affection for Prabhupada. He wasn't, you know, vindictive at all. He had already been out of the movement a couple of years. And he was still favorable. But he told one story how Prabhupada gets so exasperated with him. He was sleeping and Prabhupada came in and Prabhupada kicked him. And he said, and he kicked me hard. And then he told him, he said, for sannyasi, better to have a list of sex than to be oversleeping all the time. Because a list of sex is more passion. And sleeping too much is more ignorance. So. It's lower. Not that he was encouraging.
No, of course. I'm not following that. Kind of nice to be kicked by Prabhupada, isn't it?
And then he told how later, because he was a little upset about it, you know. But then later in the evening, Prabhupada called him in and just personally talk with him for about a half hour, just to, you know, get over that in case he had it. Mm.
I've been having a very hard time getting up in the mornings lately. This morning, we went out on the Harinam, and this morning I woke up, it was about 10 to 7. I thought, I want to go to greeting, because you had made that comment at the end of class. Prabhupada said, even at the very least, just go to greeting. You don't come to Mangalarti, at least go to greeting. And something about having associated with you and heard that in Harinam, I got up. And I haven't done that in weeks, unless I have something to do. I address the deities or I'm doing something else, then I will get up. But if it's just me and a decision, I just won't do it.
We that's the whole idea of Sadhu Sangha. We inspire each other. No, I mean, I'm not flattering you, but I was also, you know, obliged to come on Harinam because of you and that other boy. What's his name? Tredis? Or
Tejas.
Tredis.
Tavish.
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 It's an unusual name.
It's very unusual.
Yeah, it means twins and in
Gaelic.
Celtic or Gaelic, yeah.
Gaelic, wow.
Celtic. Anyway, he also asked us, so I felt, you know, after we Snoop Bakhti is so enthusiastic. No, that's the advantage of having association. Mm-hmm. We do. Tushanti chala, vimanti chala. We inspire each other. Otherwise, why did Prabhupada take all the trouble organizing? It is a trouble, you know, managing the movement. He could have, like Lord Chaitanya, when he was traveling South India, he didn't organize. He just said, just chant Hare Krishna in your village, get your villages to chant Hare Krishna. He didn't make like a hierarchy with temple president, GBC, and everything. So Prabhupada took that headache, of course, on the order of his spiritual master. But this is like the first time in Vaishnava history that it's ever been organized like this. And even others, you know, like Narayan Maharaj, they don't have the same kind of organization. It's difficult. It's a headache. It's almost like a material thing.
Mm. Mm.
It's
I guess I have a question about that. We're not going too far over time.
Okay, I haven't thought about it.
Okay. So the GBC, you know, is Prabhupada's legacy to keep the parampara intact or unified where it had failed before. You mentioned that he saw the splintering of the Gaudiya Math as a failure, and now the GBC is.
Well, I don't know if it's to keep the parampara intact, but it's to keep the society, the institution intact.
Okay. So there was a time when if you were a devotee of Krishna, you lived in a temple. And when the GBC made decisions, they sort of filtered down to your temple president, and it was, you know, highly relevant, especially to the people that live in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
I live outside the temple. I live close, but I'm wondering, how does the GBC now relate to just the broader society of this kind?
Well, for instance, we spoke to Nityananda yesterday and the day before yesterday, and he was saying how he's consulting with Giridhari and Giriraj, and Keshav Bharati, and
mm-hmm.
they're going to come here next month, I think, and make out some plans how to for preaching and so on. So in that sense, it'll affect, you know, what's the preaching you're going to be.
So they're working on some preaching strategies for overall
for Texas, I think.
Okay. Didn't know. I haven't heard many news from the GBC lately, so.
Yeah, I didn't either. I'm on the council, and I didn't hear that.
Well, it's true. We live in the temple. Our guru is on the GBC.
We would always hear what the latest thing was. Or, you know. And, of course, there's been a lot of changes since we were living in the temple. And, but you see it as a way to keep the society unified. Obviously, the parampara goes by the individual disciples who follow and teach properly. Right? But then,
obviously, the main job of the GBC would be, I mean, it is to represent Prabhupada. That should be their main function, to do like Prabhupada said, do as I am doing, so that he wanted that. And how was Prabhupada doing? He was managing this movement. I was there in the last days, and Prabhupada asked, is there any questions? No. And so manage as we were managing. So to keep that standard, in other words, make sure that there's a minimum of cheating and so on. And hypocrisy. The leaders are corrupt, and the GBC should go and see that.
Mm-hmm. Things are going on nicely in their zone.
It seems like they do. Like, they put out a lot of fires. Like, you know, Rudy was like, taking care of that whole poison thing. And,
yeah,
you know, like
right.
anything that crops yeah. up like that, they don't have to
that's
take
true.
Care of it all.
Yeah, he took a pretty active role in trying to quash the poison,
that,
poison
all that
rumors.
Yeah. There's always something.
There is, that's right.
Well, like, I like there was sort of a leadership vacuum in Europe after
yeah.
like Bismarck left. And
yeah.
Yeah, there's no shortage of service when you have an institution. But that's also our headache. It's also our solace that we have. We nobody can say, well, I don't have any service, because there's always some service you can do to help the temple. Okay. Hear my beats. We can, everybody chant one round.